Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan. I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission regular meeting of June 28th, 2023. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda, currently posted on the commission website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety for the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone. I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Berry, Commissioner Einhorn, Commissioner Fuzeci.
Here.
Commissioner Goldsby.
Here.
Commissioner Hankins.
Here.
Commissioner Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, here. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting of June 14th, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the commission's regular meeting minutes of June 14th, 2023 for adoption.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll conduct a roll of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when we call the case, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. So we'll begin with docket number FIC 2022-0329, Hector Torres versus Jason Thode, Chief Police Department, City of Hartford. I know that there's no one here on that matter, and it's a withdrawal, so I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, yes, the complaint withdrawn and it was dismissed. I'm just not here. I don't believe anybody's here from Hartford, so I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0290, William Belloc versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Attorney Caleb Hamill on behalf of the respondents.
Could you repeat your name, please?
Caleb Hamill, C-A-L-E-B-H-A-M-E-L.
And you're on behalf of the respondents?
Yes.
Is William Belloc there, please? And I'm assuming both of you would like that marked ready. Would you like that marked ready?
Yes.
We'll mark that ready. Thank you. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0292, Marley Rudko versus Andrea Bisbikos, First Selectman, Town of Colchester, and Town of Colchester. Who's here on that matter? Okay.
Julie Jakeley's counsel on behalf of the respondents.
Could you repeat your last name again?
Jakeley's, it's spelled J-A-Q-U-A-Y-S.
Q-U-A-Y-S.
Correct.
You wouldn't have had that spelling right. All right, and so we'll mark that ready. Thank you both very much. All right, next is docket number FIC 2022-0373, Kirk Carr, John Tartaglia, and John Noonan versus Chair, Planning and Zoning Commission, Town of Ridgefield, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Kirk Carr and John Tartaglia.
Would you like to be heard?
Yes.
Okay, we'll mark that ready. Is there anyone here from the Town of Ridgefield? Okay. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0394, Ryan Brooks versus Assistant Town Manager, Town of South Windsor, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? This was a withdrawal. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was a withdrawal and a dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0038, Leah Cantor versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Consumer Protection, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Leah Cantor.
Okay, would you like to be heard?
Yes, please.
Okay. Is there anyone here from the state of Connecticut?
Yes, Commissioner. I'm with the Attorney General's Office, representing
the Attorney Wertheimer, can you spell your last name again?
W-E-R-T-H-E-I-M-E.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll mark that ready. All right. Before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcement.
Sure. As indicated by the Chairman, this entire proceeding is being recorded, so there's no need to request a recording, and we will make that recording available on our website soon after the meeting. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I will keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you. All right, we'll take up the first matter that's been marked ready. It's docket number FIC 2022-0290, William Belloc versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. You can have a seat right there, Mr. Belloc. Thank you, Counsel. Would you identify yourselves for the record, please?
William Belloc, B-E-L-L-O-C-K.
And you're the complaint on this.
And Attorney Caleb Hamill with the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Thank you. So would you like to begin, Counsel?
Sure. And not to spend too much time rehashing the extended history of this request, there were a number of supplemental requests that we complied with. The proposed decision ruled in general that we were correct to withhold certain records that had been requested on the basis of attorney-client privilege. It did find that it was not apparent on the face of those records that certain portions of some of them should have been redacted, and it instructed us to produce those without redaction. We have since complied with the proposed order and sent those over to the respondent. We sent a copy of that as well to your staff. The only item I would like to note is in those portions of those records, and those are described in paragraph 28 of the proposed decision, there were other portions of those records described therein that had also been redacted. And when we produced them to the complainant, we kept those redactions unless they were part of what was described in paragraph 28. That's our understanding of the proposed order, but it is something that I would like to be sure my understanding is correct on.
Are you asking a question?
I'm more asking for clarification. I didn't see a finding that those other portions of those records in paragraph 28 had properly been withheld on the basis of attorney-client privilege. So I'd like to, that's our understanding, but I'd like to be clear on it.
Is Attorney Hyde here? Yes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon. Just identify yourself.
Attorney Zach Hyde, I was the hearing officer, the understanding is correct. I only highlighted those portions that needed to be unredacted. And so anything that was redacted that was not highlighted in paragraph 28 was properly redacted. I did want to propose an amendment to the report. It's not substantive in any way. It's just I noticed an error that I wanted to correct.
What is that?
If you go to page 3, paragraph 16, the final word of the paragraph is privilege, and I want to remove that and insert relationship. So the quoted language would be communications privileged by the attorney-client relationship.
Do we need a motion on that, Colleen?
Yeah, I think so.
Can entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I would like to make an amendment or propose an amendment to the hearing officer's report per the request of the hearing officer in paragraph 16 to change the last word from privilege to relationship.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amendment only. Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Olegan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. So, thank you. Is there anything further, Counsel?
No.
So, Mr. Bella, would you like to begin?
Yes. I received the material that Attorney Hamill sent, which I was supposed to be, I assumed it was the unredacted part of the email correspondence. The unredacted information I already had, that was already provided. There's nothing new that he's provided that I didn't already have. It's the redacted areas are meaningless because the material I have, the follow-up, is redacted. So I'm not quite sure what the purpose was of giving this some information and redacting the information that I requested. So that's number one. Number two, just to clarify, the going back to his the exemption sheet that Attorney Hamill, the basis of this for 2 years, 2015 and 2016, the DEP, an employee of the DEP, solicited, she called it her colleague's information, which is supposed to relate to me, which I never received. So now she's saying everything that's enlisted is with an attorney. So I assume everyone who works with the DEP is an attorney. There's no other correspondence other than a DEP employee and the internal attorneys working state employees. So it's meaningless. There's no way of getting information in terms of why she conducted herself the way she did based on what's being exempt. So, and if that's the case, that's fine. I'll do it another way. But I know there's attorney-client privilege, but this was long before there's been any litigation. This was long. I was just asking for advice and direction from the DEP. And now, 5 years hence, they're saying, I can't. She had information which she should have acted on, which she didn't. And if it's going to stay like this, that's the way it is until I find another legal, avenue to get it. That's where I am. So if it's, I understand attorney-client privilege, but this was strictly an administrative function. On my request, I did it right by the book. I gave her the information. I met with her multiple times. I did everything for 2 years. 3 years after that, I get a cease and desist order. I ask for more clarification, legal justification, and I get this. But so how can I possibly tell if you were acted in good faith? That's all I'm as a lay person, that's what I'm trying to get at. I want to get the unredacted version of this, and I want this commission to either say, yes, it's attorney client, and I'll pursue other sources, or no, let me have it. That's all I'm looking for.
Thank you. Counsel.
If I may briefly summarize, the litigation he's referring to is a easement dispute between ourselves and a separate company that is, to my understanding, not affiliated with Mr. Belloc regarding certain property in the town of Rocky Hill that's owned by the state that we have custody and control of. That property is subject to an easement, and there was a dispute over the scope of that easement. The so-called administrative process that he's referring to was the filing of a request for permission to use that for utility lines, and that's what started the entire litigation off. We said, no, the easement area cannot be used for those. That litigation has since resolved. The claims that there was some sort of improper administrative proceeding during the hearing, he had claimed lack of notice and lack of due process. None of those claims were raised in that litigation by the plaintiff. None. Litigation has amicably resolved, and we've moved on from it. The correspondence that he requested, to summarize what is now almost 8 years worth of this dispute, was department staff communicating with department attorneys or with members of the Attorney General's office on the legal issues that have been presented by that. And that was the basis of our withholding for attorney-client privilege.
Thank you. Attorney Hyde.
Based on a careful in-camera inspection of the records I was provided, the redacted records, what is in my report, if it was redacted, it was attorney-client privilege on the face of the document. And that was, to me, very clear. As I noted in the report, there was no testimony at the hearing, so it was purely on the face of the records themselves that I made the determination. And what was unredacted in my, or what was ordered to be provided unredacted in my report was not clearly attorney-client privilege, and Mr. Belloc has received that from the respondents.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I have one factual question. I'm a little confused. So I'm looking at paragraph 42. So there are some documents, records that you found, which were to be delivered unredacted. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's not the stuff that's being waved around here. Because that seems to have redactions in it. I'm just confused. Are the two sets of documents, one set that was totally unredacted?
If I may clarify. And
just identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry, Attorney Caleb Hamill.
I'm focused on paragraph 42 versus 28.
So paragraph 42 references one of the records in paragraph 28, which is why I'm pointing to that.
Okay.
But to use in paragraph 28, exhibit 290-6 as an example, that found that line 17 through 43 were not clearly attorney-client privileged and were produced. In lines 1 through 16 of that record, there was some additional material that we had redacted on the basis of attorney-client privilege. We continued to withhold that, and as we've been discussing, the proposed order does not.
Some of the same documents have portions redacted and portions unredacted. Some redacted for attorney-client privilege, and others unredacted because of the conclusion of paragraph 42.
And if I may, paragraph 42 addresses a separate argument the respondents made for records they or portions of the records that they wanted to keep redacted. And paragraph 42 is saying that not only previously defined, it's not attorney-client privilege, it's also not it's not properly exempt under 1-210E.
I understand. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, sir. Any other questions? Any other commissioners? Anything further?
To clarify,
just identify yourself.
I can hand evidence. You this. The,
sir, just yeah, identify
oh, I'm
yourself.
Sorry. William Bollock again, I'm sorry. To clarify, the information that, if you looked at it, that was supplied to me is information that I supplied to the DEP or an outside engineer. There's nothing that I didn't already have that had nothing to do with internal correspondence. So the redacted versions, the redacted information is the only thing on this email trail that I was looking for. Everything else is worthless. Secondly, Attorney Cale talked about ongoing litigation amicably. This predates all the litigation. This goes back to 2015. It's really simple. I contacted the DEP. I was in touch with a DEP employee about an easement. I met with them on two occasions in this over that building, the DEP building. I supplied them maps. I gave them notice. I wasn't asking for permission. I clearly said I was exercising my rights under an easement. And she said, I have to check with colleagues internally and get back. 2015, 14 emails back and forth with this. And now I found out she did seek a legal counsel internally. And she said she'd get back with that information. Never received it. 2016, it's approved. I sent her a full set of plans of the approved subdivision, showing the easement, showing the work I'm doing there. Nothing. 2016. After that, there's a quick flurry where she has all the plans. She said, what do you want next? When I start construction, I'll send the insurance for my contractors. I'm 70 years old. I've been doing this for 40 years. I know the drill. I bought lands from the state of Connecticut. I know what I'm supposed to be doing here. 2018, I started construction in 2017, stopped for the winter, started up in March of 2018. April of 2018, 3 years after we started this paper trail, she says, cease and desist, we don't think you can use easement. So if that showed up in 2015, that's fine. I can live with that. If I had that information now, say an attorney said they can't use easement for what, which is ridiculous, but if they can use easement, fine, file suit then. Let's get it over with in 1 year, okay? So instead, there was a three-year back and forth. She did nothing for two of those years, and then in 2018, and she said, attorney-client privilege. I'm sorry, that I'm arguing bureaucratic extortion, bad faith dealing. It cost not the party that he's discussing, the building company I'm working with, but me personally, it cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars in 5 years of my time. And if that's a good decision, they can't do it this way. I will find another way to do this. It's simple. If she had the information from the attorney that the easement wasn't, she could have done two things. She would have either said, yeah, you can use it. Go ahead. There's a paperwork we had. Well, she did in an email said, you're right. You're correct. There is an easement, and I just have to do some paperwork. Or she said, you can't. Let's go to court. Simple as that. It takes a year and a half. Instead, she did neither one, and I'm stuck here with the FOI trying to say, just tell me what you did and why you did it. And I understand, all due respect, I know this is not the forum for the adjudicating this thing, but if I got the information and she acted in good faith, I'll go home. I'm fine. I have no problem with that. But I don't have that. That's my position. In layman's terms, that's my position. And if it seems like every person in the DEP is an attorney or an attorney in waiting, the Attorney General's office didn't get involved until 2018. I'm just talking to the very genesis of this mess. Tell me what you did and why you did it. If she got information she didn't act, then she's personally responsible. I'll pursue that. If you did have the information, fine. Then why didn't you file suit? Either or. There's only two decisions, and I got neither one. That's where I am. I'm sorry. I'm really upset about this. That's it.
I understand Mr. Belloc's feelings in the matter, and unfortunately, the commission has jurisdiction over what it has jurisdiction over, and that's outside of our jurisdiction generally. I looked at the records. The records speak for themselves, and there's nothing more I have to say.
May I?
Yes.
And there are no other records other than, I can ask maybe the lawyer for the respondents.
We did produce a number of other records. During the hearing, we reached an agreement about what records were in dispute. Our production had been ongoing at the time of the complaint. So as we worked that out and came to an agreement of what records were at issue, we provided those for in-camera review.
So these are what was left after.
Correct.
There are no other records. You've either provided records already, or these are what are left, and you've already provided what was ordered to be disclosed, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I have one more question. I'm a little confused in his focus is that 3-year period. What record, what kind of, what was something produced in that those 3 years?
Yes, a number of email correspondence, and a number of other records as well. The final production we made was, I believe, several hundred records, totaling several thousand pages. Obviously, not all of those are at issue at this point.
Okay, and what just generically, what do you think was missing from that?
Generically, there were thousands of emails encompassing everything to do with this development. 90% of it had nothing to do with my issue. It had to do with, actually, I'm going in terms of what they're trying to do with the easement, with the town and everything. My focus was on 2015, 2016, into 2017, and this is what I have. All exempt. I have nothing. I have nothing, no internal documentation other than an email to say, oh, I spoke to so-and-so. Let's just check with Attorney Collette, and that's it. So, yeah, there wasn't, I know there's an internal conversations, and but I got nothing of substance or in any way helps me figure out what happened. And she did very early on. I had 14 emails. To the particular employee, which they provided. I mean, I got my email. I already had them, but I provided them. But the gist of what went on internally, I didn't get any of that. Zippo. And it's attorney-client. So if I'm a third party trying to deal with the state of Connecticut, did exactly what I was supposed to do, acted in good faith, did everything they wanted me to do. And then she said, well, for some reason you haven't complied with what we want. How do I know? I don't know. I mean, other than 3 years later, I end up in court arguing a cease and desist. And then after that, there was a sovereign immunity. They didn't want her to court to argue the cease and desist. So that's, I fully understand her situation, but if you're going to say attorney client, there is a process which I should be able to know what happened internally. I should. Absolutely. And I'll get there. Maybe not with this form, but ultimately I'm going to get there. That's it. If everyone at DEP is an attorney, you never get anything from anyone.
Was your question answered?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
Just because you get a question doesn't mean you can
understand.
Start your 10 minutes again.
That's it.
This is Commissioner Hankins.
Yes.
Attorney Hyde. You know, I've read this, and I've listened to, this meeting, your report. Would it be fair to say that what you've looked at is standard attorney-client privilege based on the statute and based on your application of the statute to what you've read?
Yes.
Nothing more, nothing less?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anything further from any commissioners? With that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I move the adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Golski?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, only the yes. Passes unanimously.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now Next is docket number FIC 2022-0292, Marley Rudko versus Andrea Vikos, First Selectman, Town of Colchester and Town of Colchester. Parties, please identify themselves, starting with you,
Marley Rudko.
Thank you.
I'm Julie Jakeway's counsel for the respondents.
Thank you. We have your spelling.
Yes, you have the spelling.
Right. So, would you like to begin, counsel?
So, from the respondent's perspective, the respondents don't have an objection to the decision, so we'll reserve a response depending on what the complainant has to say, but the respondents are not objecting to the decision.
Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to thank the attorney, Munn, the hearing officer, and the FOIA commission for reviewing all the testimony and the evidence that was presented. And so I am okay with the decision. I'm glad that it ruled in my favor for the promptness piece of it. But as far as the disclosure piece, although I don't agree with the decision, I understand that I don't have any evidence right now to present to show, in fact, that there are things that were missing from an email thread. So I'm okay with the decision that you've made.
Okay. It's kind of hard to prove a negative. That's the problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Did you wish to respond to that?
Just as a quick response, there was evidence at the hearing. The witness testified that the individuals who were identified in the request searched their emails for responsive records, and the scope of the request was narrow and asked for emails between two individuals and an FOI requester. And the respondents turned over the complete email thread. It was unredacted with the attachments to the thread. So that was turned over, and that was the scope of the responsive records.
Thank you, counsel. Do any commissioners have any questions, comments? All right, then with that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzeci.
With appreciation to your appearing and explaining it, yes.
Commissioner Goldsby.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0373, Kirk Carr, John Tartaglia, and John Noonan versus Chair, Planning and Zoning Commission, Town of Ridgefield, et al. Is there anybody here? Is there anybody here now?
Kirk Carr.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It doesn't look like you have any opposition, so you can begin.
Right. Well, I sent a memo that you should have received on the 21st, overnighted it to you, copied the respondents who are not here, so I can only presume they have no objections to what I'm here to say, which is in that memo, I've recommended some amendments. One is to add Alice Dew, who is the director of planning and zoning, and who was involved in this meeting. I've also asked to add some facts that were left out of the report regarding the Board of Selectmen putting forth the ordinance on the day after our application was submitted. It was noted that they had put forward their ordinance on the 18th of May, which they did discuss it, but it wasn't actually voted on by the Board of Selectmen until the 15th of June, and I think it's pertinent. Finally, the respondents could have at any time simply acknowledged the error. It was simply an error. It was a mistake. Anybody can make a mistake. But instead, they decided to contest it. And I think on that basis, simply unilaterally saying they shall do this in the future is sort of inadequate. I'd like to see an affirmation from the respondents that they are going to do what is required by this report. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the hearing officer here? Okay.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman.
Hey, how are you?
Commissioners, Mary Kate Smith. I was the hearing officer in this case. I can go through the three major points in his memo if you'd like.
Sure.
With respect to whether or not to add Al Zdu, who was the director of planning and zoning of the Department of Planning. She was the director of the Department of Planning and Zoning for the town of Ridgefield. That's a totally separate agency. The issue in this case, the complainant, which we did rule in his favor, he had alleged, well, he and the other complainants had alleged that the revised agenda for the July 26, 2022 regular meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission failed to provide adequate notice that the PZC would be discussing the complainant's regulation amendment application that had been filed with the commission, the Planning and Zoning Commission. And then he also alleged that the Planning and Zoning Commission then discussed the application at the July 26th meeting without voting to add that to the agenda by two-thirds vote, which they were required to do. My decision proposes that we agree with him, that that is in fact what happened. But the first I would note with respect to designating parties, the executive director or her designee under our governing regulations designates the parties. So, and there's a longstanding policy that the agency at issue and the agency director or the head of the agency are the proper parties. So in a case like this where there's a meetings issue, that would be the commission, which we, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then the head of that, which was the chairman. Those were the proper parties. The Planning and Zoning, or the director of the Planning and Zoning Department is a staff member of the town and the Planning and Zoning Department, separate in part from the commission. Though she had a role in the sense that she provided assistance, she's a staff member, so she did provide some guidance, but she has no legal authority with, well, I should put it this way, she doesn't, but at the end of the day, it's the chairman and the Planning and Zoning Commission who have the legal responsibility to have the agenda correct and also has the responsibility for the conduct that occurs at the commission meeting. So that is why she was not made a party. And I don't think it would be proper to add her as a party, and she shouldn't be added as a party. The complainant made, had testimony that he thought she might have provided some incorrect advice or should have done something more. But again, that's not her actual legal responsibility. At the end of the day, the responsibility was the commission and the chairman. So I disagree that we should not amend the report to add Ms. Dew as a respondent. With respect to Mr. Carr's memo says that paragraph six, I had included that it is found that on May 18th, 2022, the Board of Selectmen for the town of Ridgefield announced that it was in the process of drafting an ordinance to prohibit cannabis establishments and cultivation in the town. My understanding of what he's saying is that's not incorrect. He just wants an additional fact that the actual ordinance had not been acted upon or advanced by the Board of Selectmen until June 15th. I didn't include that fact because I was focused on more when it was first announced, at least that it was in the process to the public. So that's why I included May 18th. I don't necessarily have an objection to adding June 15th. I don't think it advances or impacts the decision at all. But I think he wants that fact in because he's saying that his application to amend the zoning regulations had been accepted by the P&Z the day before. So, but I really don't take a position on that. You could add that if you think it's necessary. With respect to the final point, the complainant said that he thought that we shouldn't issue an order requiring the respondents to acknowledge that they did this incorrectly or that they were wrong. However, I think that the whole purpose of the contested case hearing is for each party to provide, to set forth their arguments. They disagreed. They thought they did it properly. They made a legitimate argument. I just think it was wrong. But that was what the contested case hearing was for. I don't even think courts have the authority to force individuals to admit that they did something wrong. So I don't think that would be a proper order. I don't think the commission has the authority to require the respondents to admit what they did was wrong. However, I think, you know, the order is a longstanding type of order that we issue in these situations. At the hearing, the chairman did testify that it takes the Freedom of Information Act responsibilities seriously. So, I mean, I think they will try to follow the order in good faith going forward. If they continue to violate, the complainant certainly can bring additional complaints. The commission can consider other remedies if that happens, such as, you know, a fine or civil penalties, I should say. But I don't think the order should be. That's my recommendation, that the order should not be changed in the way that the complainant is requesting. If you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Anybody on the commission have any questions?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, sir?
I guess only this. The facts are that before this meeting, the omission of our application from the agenda was called to the director's attention, who has control of the agenda, the initial agenda. And then she sends it to the chairman, and he sometimes adds or deletes things, but she was in control of it. At the meeting, when he starts talking about A-22-1, our application, she says, the ordinance is what's on the agenda. She says, are you talking about the ordinance, or are you talking about A-22-1? He says, we're talking about A-22-1. She was well aware that A-22-1 was not on the agenda. She is kind of a chief compliance officer, too. She's the person who sort of keeps them on track with certain things. At this point, I believe she should have said, excuse me, you need to stop and add it to the agenda. So we have a difference on this particular point. I'm not an attorney, so that sort of trumps my, but we disagree on that. On the end, I'm not asking them to admit anything. I'm asking them only to affirm what you're saying. You say they shall do such and such. It's very unilateral. And I'm saying I'd like for them to say we shall do such and such. I'm not asking for an admission of guilt. I agree the Fifth Amendment protects them. But for you to say you shall not, and for them to say they shall not, I think are two different things. And I'm asking for you to ask them to agree to not do this in the future.
Yes. Mr. Goldsby.
Can you tell me, is there anything in, there might be, but I may have missed it, anything in your report that, or anything that was actually admitted at the hearing that would support his position regarding this person's role to change the agenda? Did that come up at the hearing at all?
He did discuss that. I mean, I think it's true that the planning and zoning director does assist the commission and the chairman in preparing the agenda. I mean, that happens a lot in the planning and zoning sector. But at the end of the day, it's the chairman who has the responsibility to, so it's like having a staff member who prepares the agenda. She could have said, well, you know what, don't forget, you should have added it. But that's not her responsibility or role. There was, and as far as the chief compliance officer, there was no evidence as to that.
Is there anything in your decision as of now that would state that as a finding of fact based on the evidence that you heard that this person could or assist in drafting the agenda for the meetings?
I didn't add that into the report, no.
Mr. Carr, would that suffice as to what you would be looking for? I think legally it seems as if our hands are tied as the commission in terms of what we can do as a party, but based on what I've heard you say, my understanding is you want something maybe in the record that stated that she was some sort of responsible party or had some responsibility in the agenda. Is that fair?
Listen, my name is Jimmy. I'll take what you give me. But I guess the point at the hearing, I did point out Ms. Dew's responsibility. And actually, in the filing of the complaint, she is listed as a respondent. So at no time did anybody argue during the hearing. At the beginning of the hearing, I went back and listened to the audio. And at the beginning of the hearing, I said, by the way, you dropped Ms. Dew's name off of this. No one explained to me that there was some reason that she should not have been on it. It was, I don't exactly recall, but it was completely glossed over. So at no time has the taking of her name off of this, did we ever sort of agree to that. But if you think that that's the best we can do, I'm here to get as much as I can.
Commissioner Goldsby, again, that would just be my suggestion if the hearing officer feels that's appropriate based on the evidence that was admitted at the hearing, if that could be added as a finding of that as a potential proposed amendment in regards to the name being dropped off the complaint. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But
maybe heard in response?
Yes.
So at the hearing, the complainant did raise, he said, I had included her as a respondent. But in that regard, I'll remind the commission that the executive director has the responsibility to, designate the parties. And this is a longstanding practice, like I said. But what I said is you may continue with your presentation and you can re-raise that later during your presentation. And it's my contention that he hadn't. I also did explain that or inform him that, it was not the planning and zoning department's meeting, which was she's the director of. It was the planning and zoning commission's meeting. It is the body, the agency that has the responsibility to have the correct notice and agenda and to conduct the meeting properly. Sometimes staff, which is the director of the planning and zoning department, the town, assists the commission, but does not have the ultimate legal authority or responsibility. They tend to be planners. They have a lot of experience planning, and they are helpful in that regard, but they don't have the legal responsibility with respect to what the commission's duties are, including setting the agenda and the matters to be discussed at the hearing. I think what the testimony was that, she might help prepare the draft agenda, and then, but it's ultimately the chairman who decides what's going to be on the commission itself, what's going to be on the agenda. I don't think she has any legal responsibility at all. With all due respect, suggest that we don't add that, but that's for the commission to decide.
This is Commissioner Hackett. So, Attorney Smith, basically, this person, Alice Dew, I guess her name is an employee, not in any decision making capacity on any commission or agency.
Right. She's an employee of the Planning and Zoning Department of the town.
Yeah. But she's not
the commission.
Okay.
Right.
So she's cousin once removed or something.
Right.
Okay.
And typically they tend to be ex officio members, so they don't have the right to vote on the commission.
Right.
Their role is just more of an assistant.
Right.
And so we typically don't name them as respondents.
But she's even once removed from the decision making. Yeah.
Right.
Any further discussion? All right, and entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next is docket number FIC 2023-0038, Leah Cantor versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Consumer Protection, et al. Please come forward. Ms. Cantor, you can sit there. The parties, please identify themselves for the record. Starting with you, Ms. Cantor.
Leah Cantor.
Thank you.
Michael Wertheimer, I am Deputy Associate Attorney General for representing the Commissioner of Consumer Protection, the Department of Consumer Protection.
Thank you. All right. So this was a dismissal based on a failure to prosecute, so I'll let you begin, Ms. Cantor.
Thank you. Distinguished Commissioners, thanks for your time today. My name is Leah Cantor. I appreciate your hearing my appeal today and the Commission's decision regarding my case. I am driving 8 hours in total today to be here, which suggests the importance of this proceeding. My family engaged a home companion agency, which I will refer to going forward as an HCA, home companion agency for time's sake, from Wethersfield, Connecticut, to provide 24/7 live-in caregiver for my dad in my parents' home. I would later learn that the DCP had received more than 15 complaints, many verified by the DCP, that the HCA...
Excuse me, Ms. Cantor, I don't mean to interrupt you.
Sure.
I read your brief over a couple of times that you just emailed us, and you're reading from the brief, right?
This is actually different.
Oh, okay.
May I object? I am loath to do this on an oral argument, and I understand, but... The issues presented here are extremely narrow. It's not consideration of the issue on the merits. The proposed final decision dismissed the complaint for failure to prosecute. Never reached the merits, never had a hearing. The only decision I respectfully submit for the commission is whether to affirm that decision. I do not believe we are here to hear the merits or relitigate the merits at all.
I don't think they even litigated the merits.
That's correct.
It's a failure to prosecute. And I think in the transmittal documents that are sent to each party at paragraph 3, it says the complainant's duty is to show up. And if they don't appear, it could lead to a dismissal of the case. And so both parties got that in writing.
Can I just add that the Citizens Guide, which is the guidance that this commission provides for parties that participate, says that a failure to appear will, not may, will lead to dismissal of a complaint.
I think the notices may be a little gentler, but this is Commissioner Hankins, but I did notice that it was already a failure to appear by the complainant. And also, there's an email that I'm not going to attend the hearing. That's not the paragraph. Well, that's in the preamble to the enumerated paragraphs. So I would, all due respect, I think all it is, you know, if there's a reason for not appearing that can... surmount a dismissal for failure to prosecute.
So do you understand?
You're asking me why I didn't appear at my last hearing?
The issue before this commission is just the failure to prosecute, not the merits. That's what counsel is arguing. You can't get into the merits because you had your opportunity when the case was at hand and you chose not to come. So you have to explain to this commission why you couldn't attend and why we should do something different than dismiss this case. You can't get into the merits of the case, but you can explain why you didn't attend and if there's a reason why we should entertain this case
sure.
and keep it from being dismissed.
Sure.
I'll note that the record does say that you did respond and say that, I'll summarize it, I see no reason to attend. And then it says, I do not, however, withdraw my complaint. So you might want to start by explaining that. Was that, you know, was that your language that you submitted? So you need to explain that to the commission.
Okay, sure.
And have them have us understand why this matter shouldn't be dismissed based on a failure to prosecute.
Yes. Okay. This has been over 4 years going on. And I have my dad was left alone by his caregiver 4.5 years ago. And since that date, February 23rd, 2019, I have spent full time while he buried my father, who died of COVID, while I survived the pandemic. And I have contacted probably close to 3 dozen local, state, federal agencies, the government's office, the governor's office, the Elder Justice Coalition, ombudsman, state attorney's office, attorney general's office, literally everybody that I could think of. And nobody told me they would help me. And so when this hearing came up, I really didn't think I had 2 legs to stand on. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to lose. Why should I? There's nobody behind me. The DCP has the AG's office behind them. There's no one in Connecticut that stands up for consumers like me, whose dad was abused by his caregiver, who's under the jurisdiction of the state of Connecticut. Who stands up for people like me? So I didn't have a chance. I didn't think I had a chance. So that's the honest truth of why I didn't show up. And honestly, up until last week, I hadn't planned on showing up today. But I had a change of heart. And I literally, it was very late in the game. And that's why my brief was late. But I just passed 2 laws in Connecticut in the past 13 months. The DCP is going to be stripped of their jurisdiction, of the home companion agencies. It's going to be transferred to the Department of Health. That's my doing. So I've been busy. And Governor Lamont just signed that 5781 2 weeks ago. And I'm very proud of the work that I did 4.5 years to help protect people like my dad that I can't save anymore. So yeah, I had a change of heart. And I said, you know, I could show up. I just passed a law. I just passed 2 laws. I passed one last May 24th, which formed a task force, which drew the recommendations that was the basis for this law that just got passed. So this passing of the law gave me a little, you know, wind under my wing, you could say. And I'm, you know, I'm going to show up. I'm going to stand my ground. And if I lose, so be it. But I have, you know, there's no downside. So that's why I'm here. And that's why I didn't show up before.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I can certainly understand what you're saying. You know, and not being an attorney, you know, you might think that, you know, going up against a government agency, it's a no-win proposition. However, today, on today's docket, 3, Bellick, Rudco, and Carr did not have attorneys, and they prevailed against either a state agency or a municipal agency. So, you know, you didn't want to roll the dice, okay? So you pretty much acquiesced in the case being dismissed, okay? And, you know, look at it this way. You said you're responsible for 2 laws passing. So, you know, you're on the high ground in that way, okay? So, but today, you know, I'm going to vote against you, okay? I'm going to vote for a dismissal. I'll tell you that because, you know, of the history of this case. You know, I take very seriously somebody not wanting to prosecute, and I see it as somebody sitting on their rights. Okay, the last case I had as a hearing officer here, as a commissioner and hearing officer, the person didn't show up. So that case got dismissed. It was going to get dismissed. Okay?
May I ask a question?
Yes,
sure. Because I didn't show up at my last hearing, why wasn't there a memo issued that I shouldn't show up today? I just drove 8 hours today to be here.
There wouldn't be a memo issue today. I think the focus would be, you seem primed and ready to argue your case. Your case isn't lost. You can make the same request for records. All we deal with are records. You can make the same request for records, and if you don't get them, you can come to the next hearing, and you can, you were prepared to state your claim today. So it would have been better if you stated your claim when the hearing went on. I don't know what the day was when the hearing was, but it would have been better if you came prepared, because the other side came armed and prepared, because it's an adversarial process and everybody has an opportunity to put on their evidence. So that was when you should have put on your evidence, not now.
Right.
At this stage, we either thumbs up or thumbs down to the decision. In this instance, I think, I don't want to speak for all the commissioners, but when someone doesn't show when they have their opportunity to fight, they're saying, I default, I acquiesce to what you're going to do. And in fact, you said that I'm not going to, I see no reason to attend, so you gave up. You rested on your rights. Pardon me?
I believe I asked for a postponement and they denied it. That's my understanding.
I don't see any.
And the postponement was denied.
I don't see any reference to a request for a continuance. Was there?
I can address that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Attorney McGee.
For the record, Danielle McGee, I was assigned as the hearing officer in this matter. I'll address the postponement piece first. Ms. Cantor did ask for a postponement a few days before the hearing. I have her email here, and it simply says, I wish to postpone my hearing on May 22nd, 2023. There's no cause provided, reasonable or not. And I did deny that request, and I wrote in the denial that the complainant has not set forth any cause for a postponement of this matter. I never heard back from Ms. Cantor. She did not offer me any reason why she could not appear that day. And within a day or two of that ruling is when I received her email. The very next day, it looks like May 19th, where she says, not why she can't appear, but that she doesn't think it would be of any benefit for her to appear, but she won't withdraw her complaint. So she had her opportunity to provide me with some reasonable basis as to why she couldn't appear, but it seems that she felt it was not worth her time or energy at that point. And as I indicated in the report, this is not the first time Ms. Cantor has done that before the commission. The respondents appeared with two witnesses. They were ready to proceed. They were disappointed that they couldn't provide the evidence that they prepared for it to support what they had done in this case. And quite frankly, I was disappointed that I had to prepare for a case and use up the commission's time when another complainant could appear and pursue their appeal before the commission. So I think it would be fair to say that I wouldn't recommend changing the report in any way and offering Ms. Cantor another hearing. She can certainly make a new request to Consumer Protection and start the process over if she so chooses. But I don't think it would be fair to the respondents or other complainants who are waiting to be heard at this time to give her that opportunity now.
Understood.
Thank you.
So this decision is not fatal. You can ask the same records again. And if you're denied, you can come back and then go to your hearing. Attend your hearing, prepared to put on your evidence and explain why you're entitled to these records and why the exemptions that are being cited don't apply.
May I ask another question?
Sure.
There's 4 years of casework that the DCP has spent a lot of time, and I've spent a lot of time working on. I have a lot of the instances that are included in my complaints have not been clarified as to what the case numbers are, and I'm awfully confused. And I think it's fair for the DCP to be able to provide me with that information. Is that something that I have to get through FOI? I don't know how to proceed.
Yeah, I don't know if I can give you any legal advice. I think you're going to have to.
It's the state.
Consult with someone about that. Sounds like you need records, but you don't know how to identify them.
Right. I mean, I've already spent thousands of dollars on a private attorney to liaise with the DCP because they were blatantly not transparent. So I'm not prepared to spend that kind of money again, and I don't know how to proceed. This is, I could use some advice on that.
I think it's outside our jurisdiction to give you advice on how to proceed with your records request. We're happy to entertain your denial of records, if the party refuses to give you those records, we'll entertain your complaint and have a hearing on it so that you can present evidence as to why you're entitled to those records. But how do I identify those records? So, is there anything further?
Commissioner Goldsby, just to Ms. Cantor, but I definitely hear the frustration certainly in your voice, and as the chairman has already indicated, you may want to seek counsel regarding some of your next steps in terms of what you want to do. But I would just recommend, especially since you drove such a far distance here, if you are in the situation again in the future, regardless if it's this forum or something else, I think it's just more so about the respect of people's time, just as you indicated for yourself as well. Respectfully, I understand the frustration, but I'm going to also support the hearing officer's decision based on the facts that I see in this case. But know that I do wish you the best, certainly in the search, and condolences to your father.
Thank you.
Anything further? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Good luck, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Good luck, ma'am.
Item 30 is consideration of the appellate court decision in Lauthert versus GMLIC. I'll let Attorney Harmon speak about that since she argued.
Thank you, Attorney Murphy. So we got the decision from the appellate court in Lauthert. They affirmed the trial court's decision, which affirmed the commission's decision, executive director's recommendation not to schedule the case for a hearing. It was disappointing. I think, you know, the trial court's decision about all the authority we have, and you filed 44 complaints and anything over 22, you know, you are abusing our time and our, you know, the process. And Judge Weiss really got into it. And then in the middle of the trial court proceedings, she had thrown in this little argument about the conflict of interest statute. She really just, in a sentence, maybe an oral argument. So Judge Weiss never really addressed it. And then she appealed from him dismissing her appeal to the trial court. And again, she really didn't bring out this Connecticut General Statute 1-85, although the commission in its responsive brief did talk about why it wasn't applicable. And don't get me wrong, I'm glad we won. I'm glad the trial court's decision was affirmed, but I was really hoping for a more in-depth analysis about it. I do think we get a little bit from the trial court when they say, it's not paginated because it just came out. It talks about the way that Ms. Lauthert, you know, references Connecticut General Statute 185, and it says, even considering the plaintiff's minimal references to Section 185, she notably failed to explain to the court how the commission and its executive director had a reason to believe that they would, quote, derive a direct monetary gain or suffer a direct monetary loss by reason of their official activity, which was the dismissal, which was the decision not to schedule Ms. Lauthert for a hearing when the underlying allegation was that the commission engaged in a secret meeting. She never really explained how that direct monetary gain or direct monetary loss, so like from your pockets, it wouldn't really be if the commission conducted a secret meeting and then the commission agreed that they had done that, and then the commission agreed to issue a civil penalty against itself. That still wouldn't be from the commissioner's pockets directly. So I think the court understood that Section 185 didn't apply, but I was hoping for a more in-depth decision about the authority of the commission not to schedule again, I'm glad the trial court's decision was affirmed, but you know, it's a little bit.
Yeah,
it's a little bit, yeah.
You're looking at it.
But
trial.
I will say that this was argued in November after a September argument to the Supreme Court, an October argument to the Supreme Court, and a November argument to the appellate court. So I do want to thank my moot court team for getting me through three consecutive months of oral arguments to the higher court. So it was Attorney McGee, I believe Attorney Hyde, Attorney Miller, Attorney Smith, and Attorney Munn who had got me through two previous months of oral arguments and then had to get me through November 2022 as well. So they did a great job. So yeah, we won, but I was disappointed a little bit.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job, Jerry.
And then a remand, I guess, right?
So just picking up on what Alicia said, we are awaiting decisions in two Supreme Court cases that we were hoping would come out.
What are they?
One is
so the September one is the case against Demas, the police report concerning an accidental death that they claimed was a psychiatric record that I argued in September to the Supreme Court, which I have a good feeling about. And then the November case was the On the Road case in Madison Police Department, where they had requested the file and they said there was an ongoing criminal investigation, and we found that it wasn't ongoing. So that was a big case. So, yeah, I mean, we are waiting for those. I think we'll get them in the fall, I have a feeling. Probably we'll get the Demas police report case first. I think it might be a minute until we get the Madison Police Department decision. We'll see. But
even though your arguments were so persuasive.
Good job. I have a good team.
Good
I'll
job.
Tell you what. I have a great
job,
team. They work really hard.
So, and no other report on pending appeals. No, we're waiting for one or two Superior Court decisions, too. But we have no new appeals. Nothing else to report, right? Okay. Let's see, under Executive Director's Report, I just got some news from Commissioner Streeter that he has been reappointed to the commission for another 2-year term. And yesterday, I received a reappointment letter for Commissioner Einhorn to be reappointed as well. Good through 2025, June 30th, 2025. You're stuck with us. So we're waiting
I apologize in advance.
We'll be waiting on Commissioner Hankins to get his. Now, he historically, we call him Holdover Hankins because it takes
2 years to find a 2-year term.
Reappointed, and Commissioner Barry's spot too, which would be by the Speaker of the House. So those two are ripe for reappointment, and then we're still working on the additional appointments to the commission. I think they will be forthcoming, but can't guarantee that. Let's see, I think that's it under that. Under staff reports, I sent you all the email about our new attorney starting on Friday, and that we're very happy to have offered our temporary secretary a full-time post as a secretary here with the commission. And she seems very happy to be joining us, so I'm really pleased about that. Under legislative report, are we holding, Paula, on that for a little bit? You're still working on a comprehensive report. You know, the governor signed a few bills that were interested in to make them public acts. So Paul is working on a nice report for you all on that. We'll have that fairly soon, right? Okay. I don't think I have anything else unless you have some questions for me. One other thing, I guess maybe under Executive Director's Report, I will give you soon some kind of report about the status of all of those pandemic cases, let you know how many we have left. We are chipping away at them. There are some challenging, complicated ones that still await decision, but we have really pared those down in the past few months, so we're still working on that, and I'll give you a little report on where we are on the backlog overall as well. Try to do that within the next month. So that's all I have. Any questions?
I don't know who might be on the thing.
Right.
But generally, if the commission receives emails, I know that we're not going to reply all, but just it's now that they start calling commissioners that I got a call from one of our regulars, and I just wanted to mention to the rest of the commissioners about, I assume that they also got some correspondence. And I know that they have in the past, but this was the first time, a long time that I've gotten something. So, but when you reached out via to my personal cell phone,
right.
I just want to let
a call from someone, right?
So I'm trying to refer everything back to the staff.
Right. We would appreciate that. But if you have any questions about any item you should receive, for me or just how to proceed with it, please feel free to reach out.
That was it. Unless anyone has it, I'll move to adjourn.
Second, Commissioner Hackett.
Motion made and seconded. I'll take a roll call. All those in favor, Commissioner Fuzeci?
Here. Yes. Still here.
Sorry.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Will Regan? Yes. We're adjourned. Thank you all. Thank you for your hard work.
You adjourned a little early.